You got one of these?
Yeah.
We're ready for our next agenda item, and we're going to call all the players to the table. Albert and Joe and Joanne, come on up, and let's
get all that plugged in.
Oh, there you go. And welcome, Joanne.
Thank you.
Good to have you here.
Hi, Joanne.
And,
welcome.
Morning. Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to
be
here.
We're basically just here to listen.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, if I may take just a moment.
You bet.
So, to kind of give you...
You have to talk really loud.
Thank you. Go ahead and put that in.
Is
here.
That...
it's on. You just have to get it close to you.
I can talk louder.
Thank you.
Is that better? So, Mr. Chairman... So basically where we're at, just to give just a brief synopsis, is really what we did is, you know, after public concerns about broadband and the service that we have in Sublette County, eventually you all hired Joe. And Joe's responsibility basically was, what do we have, what do we want to have, and how much would that cost? And so over time, with a work group, we kind of defined some of that. And so Joe submitted his plan. You've seen the map. You've seen the cost. You've kind of approved that plan. And so then what's the next step? So the next step is, what is feasible, I think, and then how do you implement the plan? And so that's where I think we need to move to a different consultant, type of consultant, that could actually go out and determine, is there a provider that would want to play the game with this county? Is there money available? What kind of money is available? And how much in the end would the county and the communities have to support this project? Is the project doable? Does it make sense? And I think that's where you bring in somebody else to look at that. And so as we looked at consultants, that's where this, I will now turn it over to Joanne. You've seen her. She's provided you all with a couple of versions of the proposed plan, and I'll just turn this over to her to talk about what she sees.
Okay, perfect. Go ahead and use that microphone.
Okay. Thank you. It's very nice to be here. This is my first time in the county, I must be honest. Happily mm-hmm. not my first time in Wyoming. I spent some time in Wyoming and enjoyed it, and I spent quite a bit of time in the West working on various kinds of rural broadband projects at both the state and the local level. And you have a very beautiful county. I saw most of it in the light this morning as I drove up. I actually came from Salt Lake City. I had a spectacular drive. I'm looking forward to the return drive as well. It's one of the pleasures of my work is that I get to see some really remarkable parts of the United States. Very fortunate. So let me share a little bit about myself and my company, although hopefully you've got some of the background on that, and then I can share with you how we think about this kind of project and what we would advise you do as you go through the next steps of planning to consider whether or not to go forward and actually invest on such a significant scale in this infrastructure. I'll start by talking about me and my company. I'm actually an attorney by training. I have not practiced law in almost exactly 21 years. It'll be April 1st. We'll be 21 years, and yes, I have been counting. I think of myself as a broadband analyst. I have worked, my little company, we are 40 people around the country with a headquarters just outside Washington, D.C., but a client base all over the United States and staff all over the United States, because broadband makes it possible for us to hire terrific people who don't really want to live in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., but want to do this kind of work. And as long as they have a decent broadband connection and they are themselves willing to telecommute, it works very well. So I have a number of people in Washington State, one person in New Mexico, and one person in California. Our team of 40 people work almost exclusively for the public sector, states, localities, occasionally tribes, and we also work for nonprofits quite frequently, including think tanks that are trying to understand the broadband environment, the broadband technology, how the market works, and so on, so they can develop the kinds of work that they do, primarily in Washington. And what we do as a team is some of what Joe does, some of the engineering and the planning and the cost estimation, although in this case he has very ably taken care of that. And then we work on devising strategies for local government in particular to execute broadband planning. And the way we approach it is generally from a public-private partnership standpoint. We work almost exclusively, as I said, for the public sector, but I don't think that city, county, state-owned broadband is going to be the solution to our broadband challenges as a nation. If that were the case, we would have already solved the problem because counties and towns and cities are so acutely aware of how enormous the challenge is. And there has been so much activity and so much concern at the local level. What doesn't exist is an easy economic path forward for local governments to solve this problem. And that's why we have to find alternative solutions. So increasingly, particularly over the past 7 to 10 years, what my business planning team under my leadership has done is work with developing new strategies for public-private collaboration. There are parts of the United States where the private sector simply will not solve our broadband challenges because the economics won't work. And even if the economics do work, those private sector entities are going to put their dollars to work in places where there's a greater return on investment. And this is a massive rural challenge, but it's actually in some cases also an urban challenge, but it's a larger rural challenge. And there's not a private sector strategy in that sense. And then the leadership coming from Washington, D.C. has been frankly pretty uneven. There's some funding, but it's not nearly adequate to the task. And that means that state and local government has to be part of the solution, and that's the sort of thing that we work with. Are there ways to share risk as between state, local, ideally with some federal funding, and the private sector in ways where local governments are making investments in the way that they would in economic development programs or other kinds of investments in the community, but are ideally not taking long-term operating risk, not having to build a staff to do things like customer service, billing and collections, sales and marketing, the kinds of things that are not necessarily the core skills or strategies of local and state government. And we build those kinds of strategies as between public and private sectors. And that's very much the focus of my time. I will say also, and then let me sort of, in a moment, I'll launch into talking about where I think, how I think you could approach your set of challenges here. But I will say just finally, as part of the introduction of my company, is that we are an extremely conservative consulting firm. This is just the appropriate and natural part of working for the public sector. It is not a comfortable thing from my philosophical standpoint to be encouraging counties and towns to go out and take on large amounts of debt to build speculative infrastructure or to build something where there's sort of a hope that at some point there might be a customer for it. I will sometimes have clients who say, we want you to get us to yes, find a way to get there, and then we will try to do so, but we will articulate for them the full range of risks and what that entails. And there are a wide range of different risks, financial and otherwise, that localities encounter in going through this sort of thing. But our job is to find strategies, find feasible and defensible strategies, but also fully understand the risk profile, what the community is willing to take on from a risk standpoint, where the private sector will come in and take on risk, and then articulate it fully so that you know exactly what you're getting into. And that's our consulting philosophy. I'll say one more thing from a technology standpoint also, and this speaks to consulting philosophy. We are not, unless asked to, we are very reluctant to ever recommend or specify emerging technologies. Fiber optics, conduit, this is solid, future-proof infrastructure. These are investments that, in the case of conduit, you'll use for 100 years. In the case of fiber, if you maintain it well, you'll use for 50 years. Emerging wireless technologies, the things that are getting a whole lot of hype in the industry these days, I don't know if you all kind of get the full range of articles and the hype around things like 5G wireless technology and so on. These technologies don't yet exist. They haven't really been deployed at any scale. They're in pilot stages in select metropolitan areas, and they're not coming to rural America anytime soon. Frankly, they're not coming to metropolitan America anytime soon. And we are very cautious about also not ever assuming that it would be appropriate or comfortable for a local government to be experimenting with technology unless they choose to do so, in which case we articulate the risks. So hopefully that gives you a sense of how we think about these kinds of projects. And that leads to my preliminary thinking based on what I've seen in talking with Albert and also in reviewing Joe's report and map and cost estimate, my preliminary sense of where you are. The first part is that you are considering investing, or investing with the private sector, hopefully with the state and federal government as well. You are considering investing in a very solid infrastructure, something that is a long-term and future-proof infrastructure, something that we know with confidence we will use for the rest of all of our lifetimes. I will occasionally get the question when I do presentations like this, well, do we know that this is the right technology? Or is there something else that's going to come along and replace it, and we'll all be talking about balloons or drones or et cetera? Not going to happen. Fiber is the infrastructure of the future. It's the interstate highway system of the future, but it just has to come into every one of our communities, ideally to all of our businesses, institutions, and homes. So you've already made some very, I think, thoughtful technology choices. You've also built a layered strategy that I think is very prudent, to start with building backbone that effectively gets you that system of state roads, the digital equivalent of state roads, and then an additional layer to get infrastructure to businesses, and then layering on to homes in your population centers, and ideally, in the long run, over time, if feasible, to homes in the more remote, less dense areas of the county, although I'll be honest and tell you that the economics of that are going to be exceptionally challenging, even with federal support, if it materializes, as we hope it will. And that layered structure from an engineering and a cost estimation standpoint is something that my team would then take a look at, verify all of the work that Joe has done, which is, you know, from my preliminary analysis, exceptionally solid and based on a whole lot of experience. And then we would translate that into a series of business strategies and financial models. And we would build a set of financial models that build upon each other, where we understand all of the different components of what you're trying to do, backbone, business, residential, and population areas, and then ideally, over time, residential in the less dense, less populated areas of the county, and what that entails, what the full range of capital and operating costs will be under a range of different assumptions, right? Could be some federal support, could be some state support, et cetera, and what the full range of operating costs will be, because even if the capital costs are solved, even if that challenge is taken care of, operating costs, particularly for an infrastructure this extensive over some period of time, could be pretty extensive. And all of that is built into the financial model so that you understand the implications and the cash flow implications. And we start with a base case scenario in which we assume that this would be a full public build. And we look at what the bonding requirements would be, what the full range of costs around that would be. And then based on that base case scenario, we know what the total cost is. And from there, we then bring in what hopefully will make all of this much more viable financially, which is, are there state grants available? Is there federal funding available, both capital grants and ideally ongoing operating support? What might be the role of the private sector from the standpoint of sharing capital cost, but also, and I think very importantly, undertaking significant operating risks such that you don't sit with that operating risk over time? And what are the implications of all of those different scenarios? And then where does the customer element of this come in? And we build a number of different public-private strategies for ownership, but also revenue sharing, if that's something that is attractive to the county. such that we are trying to understand what the implications would be for the private partner based on the revenues they would be seeing, and whether the payment to the county for use of the infrastructure would be based on a share of revenues, or would be based on a flat amount, or would be a combination of the two. And in my experience, it's usually a combination of the two, because that allows the risk sharing that most private partners are going to look for to undertake something along these lines. There's also a related set of issues around, do you as a county actually want to own those, or would you rather just try to make sure that it gets built and then allow the private sector to own it? And we would analyze that set of questions from the standpoint of long-term policy goals that you have. Can you secure your long-term economic development and other goals for this infrastructure if you don't own it, or if you don't have some kind of significant influence over it? And we build strategies and recommendations around that. In order to get to all of this data, we would engage with the private sector through ideally an informal process, such as a request for information and conversations. And then once the strategy is really solid and you know that you want to go and you're ready to go, and you hopefully know that you also have the kinds of support that you need from the state and from the federal government, then through an RFP. But that's a later stage, and we wouldn't recommend that you go out to RFP until you're absolutely sure that you have what you need from the revenue standpoint and that you fully understand the risks. One last piece of that is we're also quite experienced with the federal broadband funding programs, which would hopefully be applicable in multiple ways here. Less experienced with the Wyoming programs, but we write a whole lot of broadband grants at the state level all the time. And we also do a lot of public safety work, and we do a lot of public safety grant writing, an enormous amount, in fact. I have a team that's dedicated just to public safety, and then the grant writers overlap the different areas. Public safety communications, I should be very clear. There are multiple scenarios here also where the infrastructure gives you additional value from the standpoint of county and town operations, particularly in the public safety space, where there's additional value there that could get computed into the financial model, but could also ideally over time result in additional funding, particularly from Washington, to support it. So let me stop there. Hopefully that's a good introduction to us and to how I think about this kind of project and how we approach it, and I'm hopeful that you have a lot of questions for me.
Go ahead, gentlemen. Go ahead,
Matt. I guess my first one, knowing that we're 100 miles from Walmart and 100 miles from McDonald's, we are rural. So, and you took the trip, so you saw it.
And the McDonald's part was the thing that actually astonished me, I have to be honest. And I think of myself as really well-traveled. I have driven most of New Mexico, most of Arizona, most of Colorado, and most of Northern California. And I don't think I've ever been 100 miles from McDonald's.
Yeah. That's where we are.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you take the work that Tom, Albert, and Joe have done, would you say at this point where we are, we're way ahead of the general rural community in looking at bringing broadband to our county?
That's an excellent question. I think the answer is yes, in many ways, in the sense that I think the way you've proceeded and the analysis you've done has been very rigorous. And I work with a lot of rural communities around the country, and you know, rural looks different in different parts of the country. So small towns in New Mexico will be very different to here, and then rural Appalachia, where I do a ton of work, almost isn't rural compared to what you have here, although it's still rural by standards of where we are and very mountainous. But I think the level of interest among rural communities is incredibly high, but there's seldom a strong sense of how to proceed, and the analytical work that is done to determine how to succeed is frequently not very rigorous. There's just sort of a hope of, you know, maybe we can build this ourselves and there will be enough customers and enough revenue at some point that it'll pay for itself. And unfortunately, that's almost never going to be the case in a rural community. There has to be some kind of capital and operating support to make it work. This is true of all rural infrastructure. Right? It was true of how we got electricity out to rural America a century ago. So I would say you are ahead in the sense of the rigor of how you've approached it. You are ahead, one hopes, in that there is some leadership at the state level here where you can count on the state as a partner. That is not the case in all the rural states where I work. And then another thing I'll say is that you're ahead in some ways in that your demographics are going to be helpful in the sense when private providers look at the broadband market, they are thinking about the revenue potential, they're thinking about how many customers they're going to have, and they're thinking about what the average revenues per customer or per user will be. The optimal demographics for that is reasonable levels of education, lots of telework, lots of distance needs, ideally, frequently, second home areas and vacation home areas, particularly people who are looking for the lifestyle benefits that certain rural communities will give them, and then areas that have solid retirement communities who are frequently looking for big broadband as a means of staying engaged in certain kinds of things that they might have had when they lived in more metropolitan areas. So based on my relatively brief look at the demographics, the industries you have here, I think you are ahead of other rural counties where I work that are going to be more challenged from the standpoint of what the likely revenues might be from the customer base. Does that make sense? It's
yes,
a tough
to a point
thing to say.
But
yeah,
you're talking to me now.
Yeah.
So
okay.
What are we lacking in that rigor?
Well, I think you have a very solid path forward from an engineering and a cost estimation standpoint, but the next phase is developing business strategy and very comprehensive financial modeling. I mean, I think ideally before you make a decision, and this is from my sort of conservative way of seeing the world, you would have at least a 10-year pro forma with a full understanding of what costs you could end up facing and what the cash flow picture would look like, and if you're going to be facing bonding requirements and what those costs will be and what that looks like over time, what the maintenance expenses could be and how all these things fit together. And what that should tell you is if the requirement to make the entire project pay for itself, to achieve positive cash flow in a reasonable period of time, and then maintain and sustain that positive cash flow, if that is the goal of the effort, and I suspect that it is, then what are the sensitivities and the risks around that? What if there were a change to federal funding, if that's what you were counting on? In year 7, what would the risk be? What might it look like? How much additional cash would the county need to come up with? Or what about if the private partner was less successful at revenue generation and achieved 50% penetration or take rate rather than the projected 60%, right? And these are totally hypothetical numbers. I'm making them up. But what are the implications? What are the sensitivities? What does that look like? Just so that you have a full sense of what the total cost could be.
So is the next step in that beginning process is to try to obtain an RFI? Is that part of that?
Yes. I think that writing an RFI, which is really just asking the private sector, what's your interest? What might you be willing to pay us? How much risk will you take over time? If we help you with this, what would you do for us in an enforceable way where we know you'll really do it? That gathering that information from the local companies that are here in this region, and maybe from other companies that are not here but might be close by and might be interested. And by close by, I mean, obviously, it's a pretty big rural area. But is there, so that would tell you how much of this cost would be borne by a private partner. Then that added to what's the potential for some of this cost to be borne by the state through grant programs, and ideally by the federal government through their wide range of different kinds of federal programs, both capital grants and then ongoing operating support. Then you put all of that into a financial model, and it tells you, well, you know, we have to worry that in year three, we're going to have a shortfall of cash. Are we going to have to come up with that money ourselves, or can we count on the network to generate it? It's those kinds of questions that would be answered through this kind of process, so that before you go forward, you know how much financial risk there is.
And if there is a provider willing to work in our, I don't call it rural, I call it our frontier model. Right?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. One or more.
Right.
Go ahead,
Mr. Chairman. This is a pretty complicated scenario when you try and look at the whole picture, but I did have a discussion recently with Lincoln County, and I admit I have very little in-depth technical understanding of this whole process, but supposedly Lincoln County had about a $2 million project. They got a $1 million loan from Slip Board, and in order to put the conduit in that they put in, they got a provider in trade for a 18-year lease of the conduit to, between that and the Slip Board, they got the money to put in conduit capable of, what, three tubes, whatever it is goes in the conduit. And they think they're going to be able to sell the other two, and actually they're hopeful they're going to generate some revenue. So in looking at it in our situation, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is how do we get to the point of having that discussion with potential, number one, are there any potential people out there that would be willing to commit to leasing space in a conduit? Mm-hmm. Who might they be? What might we be looking at? What kind of information do we need to know, for example, so we could go to our private partners and have enough information to present to them in order to get them to make a decision on a commitment? How much do they really want this fiber available, say, to some place out along the Paradise Road where a lot of concentration of industry is? And if they do, how much are they willing to commit to invest? How much is potentially, at what point can we have all these commitments identified, whether it's through the Endow program, whether it's federal funding? It's my understanding that the state, and Albert probably knows more, if anybody would, about this, of the state actually investing in pipelines, not just oil and gas pipelines, but supposedly maybe these kinds of pipelines, conduit is a form of a pipeline, in addition to Endow. What does that mean in the whole picture? I have no idea. I don't even know if that's contemplated for broadband. But somehow, if we're going to move forward, we've got to get from the engineering, the stuff we have now, to the point that we can start getting commitments prior to making a decision to go forward and actually get something done. So I guess, is your proposal, are you saying as a consultant, you can get us from where we are now to where we can start answering these questions we need in order to make a decision. I guess that's my bottom line question.
Yeah. You know, with the exception of the clients I have who had already built and then brought us in after the fact to try to figure out, all right, now how do we make this work financially? Don't build without knowing how it's going to work financially, by the way, because I think they've all regretted it. But with the exception of those, every project I've ever worked on had commitments in hand and a solid sense of what the federal and state funding elements would be, ideally because the grant process had already been executed before they went forward with this kind of expense. So the goal of the initiative is to get you to the point where you have enough information, enough guarantees, enough commitments that you know that making the investment is not speculative. Now, before we get to the commitment stage, though, there's a whole lot of planning and process involved. The private entities won't make any commitment at all until they know exactly where the county is and where some of the localities are as well. So a request for information is to get their sense of what they're interested in, to start a negotiation, to start a process of planning and working with them so that we have enough data to be able to plan going forward, to know what are the gaps in terms of what we're going to need from a capital standpoint and from an operating standpoint in dollars. So what will the private sector do? What might we see from the federal government? What might we see from the state? And what is then the missing piece where the county and the towns might have to step in? All of that planning is still preliminary. Everybody's saying what they might be willing to do under circumstances where everybody else steps up as well. But gathering all that information, analyzing the federal programs and the state programs, which I'm going to say, unfortunately, I think the state programs are probably going to be more generous for this kind of project right now than what is available at the federal level. But analyzing all of that, building the grant applications, applying, and simultaneously then going through more detailed negotiations with the providers such that you have commitments. If we do X, will you do Y on this long-term basis? That's the goal, is to get you to that. But it's there's a lot of putting the puzzle pieces together in advance of that. But that's the process that can make you feel like, all right, we've thought through everything. This was rigorous, and we didn't miss any piece of this. And that's how you mitigate risk. Does that make sense?
Well, it does. But I guess that leads to my next question, then. Do we have a proposal that would tell us what it's going to cost to get to the point we're talking about, to where we can start getting commitments and everything we've been talking about this morning, to get from where we're at now to where we need to be to make this decision? What's that going to cost?
Consultant, you mean what would her cost?
Yeah.
And I think I've got that in front of me.
You've got a couple different variations on the proposal from us, and I think actually in light of some of what we have discussed already, I might even tweak it further around. There's a new federal funding source that has just been announced to get infrastructure or services to the most remote parts of the county, and we'd want to integrate that into the planning as well. But all of that is effectively included in the proposal we've given you, and it's just a question of how many grant applications you would need. I'm guessing, you know, you're only looking at a couple or three based on what's available at the state level and based on what we know about the federal programs. But we can also give you a proposal that doesn't include the grant writing but gets you through all of the planning and positions you then to decide, okay, now let's apply for the grants or not. Another way of putting this is that we're happy to be very flexible, but I think I understand what the goal is, which is you want something that is actionable, but where you fully understand what your risk is and where you have binding commitments from all the other parties that you'd be relying on to be part of the team.
Thank you.
In looking at your consultant work plan,
I mean, I like where you're headed with this 1, 2, and 3. And when we get down to G, where it says report back to the commissioners on the feasibility of the project, we want the hard facts and the professional opinion. From there on, then that's a roadmap forward after that if we decide to move forward, if the funding is there and where we're headed. So as I read this correctly, you just bill at an hourly rate for the work that you do with a not-to-exceed amount. Is that correct?
That's right. We only bill, we only charge based on actual hours expended.
Yeah.
So if the work turns out to be far fewer hours than I'm anticipating, that's all you would be charged for.
And there may be some point in the path forward up to letter G that you might reach a conclusion that it may not be feasible for us. And if that is the case, then you'll let us know well in advance rather than waiting till down to G to tell us? Or?
Yes, I can promise you that. I am not in the business of just writing reports to sit on shelves so I can send a bill. We, you know, that conservative consulting philosophy, but also the fact that we have worked for local governments. Mm-hmm. My partner and I and my team are, you know, practically our entire careers, 21 out of my 24 years since I graduated from law school, have been in this community and in this space. And I value the reputation of my company, and our job is to help you to solve problems, not just to send you bills.
Terrific. Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, I would assume that in terms of moving forward, gathering this data, determine the feasibility, that would almost have to include the grant writing in order to position ourselves for available monies, particularly from the state. Would you agree with that?
Ideally, yes. I think you'd want the plan first, where you understand what the potential impact of the grants would be, because there's a scenario where we build a financial model and we assume best case scenario on all the grants and the numbers still don't work. And you say, okay, we don't want to spend the money to apply for the grants because we're not going to come up with X number of dollars per year for the next 30 years.
Thank you.
But ideally, the other thing about grant writing is, depending on how the grant is structured by the state, or in some cases by the federal government, they may require you to have the full plan ready to go and the commitments from the private partner or partners and so on before they'll let you submit the grant. So the staging of what happens when is a, you know, one of the questions that would have to be figured out.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And, you know, I've been a big poo-pooer of the federal CAF II money, and but they've actually created timelines now. And so that CAF II money is available, but only if a provider by year 6 is willing to put, is willing to build out 100% to 100% of the homes or whatever localities, whatever they call it.
Census block.
Yeah, in census blocks. And so in Subic County, I think there's 4 census blocks. The amount of money is almost $3 million a year for 10 years, which is $30 million. I think, and the timeline is that the initial application, which is kind of it's the way FCC evaluates the financial ability of a company to move forward on projects. It's really not them saying that they're going to bid, it's saying that they might want to bid. But that's going to be hitting like the 1st of April. And so none of these timelines are great, right? Because the state, you know, even if we pass something in the legislature, there's still business-ready community grants, so we still have that potential going forward. That's what Lincoln County is. But the state one, we have to wait till the end of the legislature to see if there will be one. And then it will have a timeline in it when it will be up and running by. You know, I have some influence on that, perhaps, but perhaps I don't. You know, you never know about that, right?
Time will tell
whether I have any influence on that. But I guess my point is this FCC CAF money is important enough that I think if you go ahead and hire somebody, we need to look at that and to try to get to see if a provider has interest, encourage providers to have interest. I provided Mary and Tom a little resolution for you guys to consider later in the day or whenever. Basically, you know, asking providers to take a look at Sublette County, because I think it's a lot of money, right? Mm-hmm. This would get, you know, broadband to homes in Sublette County, every home, potentially, or everyone in a census block that was actually bid on. And so I think it's important to see where we could stand on that. It's unfortunate that they're moving this quickly, in a sense, because I don't think it's too fast. I don't know that people are going to have time to really gear up for it, providers. But providers have been knowing this is coming for a while, so we'll see. But anyway, I think that would be one piece that you would want a consultant to look at, is this, and then how that relates to the larger project going forward, and to bring you back some information on that too.
Okay. Can I add something on the FCC CAF funding that the FCC the last week of December published a new list of available locations for funding. Statewide, it went down $4 million, but per year. But in this county, it only went down $28,000 per year. So from $2,990,000, it is still $2,962,000. We do know of three potential service providers that have been talking with us about being interested. They have been looking at the old numbers since April or May, June. The new numbers are only $28,000 a year different. So the folks we've already been talking to pretty much know what is available. They know, based on our plan, that the core network will be in place if we move forward with it. So they know that the monies that CenturyLink did not think were sufficient to cover their cost of getting out into the more rural areas. They will know, with a plan like ours plus the FCC funding, we will have a better chance of having more bidders bid on that funding than if we did not have that core in place.
And I've been trying to work with Mr. Chairman, trying to work with our congressional delegation. You know, I've had conversations to try to ease the conditions within this grant. Joanne told me earlier that, you know, the head of that deal is pretty set on his road ahead, so it may be pretty hard to influence that process. But anyway, just food for thought as you guys go forward. I got a little letter that I would like you all to consider at some point to send to providers. And I didn't bring enough for everybody, but I sent it to Mary last night.
I've got it.
Be in your list of things.
Was that this resolution?
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about.
I also agree about the power of that program. It's still tough to make this work economically, but if there is a provider who, based on the county potentially building the backbone and the access to the federal funds through this reverse auction process, if there is a provider who's willing to do it, it by definition solves your broadband problem, because they're required to serve 100% of the census blocks, assuming they bid on all four. But the other thing that I think is a huge plus is that the federal government is then responsible for making sure that they do it. And you don't have to be in an enforcement role. And there's a real plus to that, assuming the federal government does it. But I think that will be the case, because there's a real concern about this. The one other sort of question mark piece to all of this is, the president has been talking about an infrastructure bill for a long time, and supposedly introduction of some kind of bill in Washington is really imminent. It's not an enormous amount of money, and it's going to require very, very large state and local and private sector matches, something like a 5X contribution at the state and local level compared to what's coming from the federal government. But the plus is that the states will determine their priorities for the funding. And if the state of Wyoming, which seems to be very interested in rural broadband right now, very focused on it, if that is a priority, then some of the funding could be allocated toward that. So it's more icing on the top than a big piece of meat, frankly. for the business model, but it's one of the things that is still out there, and since you're very engaged with your delegation, sure. Something to speak to.
Okay. In interest of time, do any of you gentlemen have anything else?
Mr. Chairman, I think the only thing I need to say, and I don't mean to oversimplify this, but at some point in time, we're going to have to decide, because I'm not sure we're in the money-making business. And so are we doing what is best for the people of Sublette County, whether it be economic development or whatever, is to become a partner with all of the things that have been talked about today. And I think it's something that we'll have to sit down and talk about amongst ourselves, rather than being the landlord of something, which I'm not sure I want to be part of, but
I understand.
May I share a thought on that?
Yes.
I very much agree with you that that's an important conversation, and one of the things I sometimes do is facilitate that conversation among stakeholders and elected officials, is determining what role do we as a community, as a public entity, really want. Do we want to be the landlord? Do we want to be a service provider? Or do we want to just facilitate the private sector? Most often, frankly, the answer is the latter, and that's entirely appropriate. But the most important thing, I think, to note is this is not going to be a moneymaker for the county. There is absolutely no scenario where that's the case. And I never want to be a buzzkill. I don't think you're all expecting it's going to be a huge revenue generator. You know, an environment or a situation where it pays for itself would be an absolute best case scenario, and the real value to the community is from an economic development and education and business development standpoint and so on. But sometimes the landlord role is necessary to make all those other pieces happen. But that's part of the planning process.
Yeah. Commissioner?
I don't really have a question. It's a comment that kind of stemmed from earlier. Some of the other partners will be Sweetwater County and Lincoln County. As of our meeting last Thursday, they showed interest in helping us tie this together, so we're not just an island out here with our infrastructure. We've got to get to the other parts of this tie-in, and they do seem interested. We've never had conversation with Teton County at any point, but I believe Sweetwater County said they're still microwaving everything to Farson. Is that what their tech guy said, that everything's microwaved to Farson right now, and they would like to get away from that? And on that point,
long-term thing.
And on that point, Farson is part of the Swinsis block in together with Sublette County.
Chip to about 1 mile south of the intersection with, was that 28 highway? 28.
Some point that census
little flag slot and then Farson.
Commissioner Burnett.
I'd just like to say I'm interested in this proposal purely from the standpoint of trying to get enough information or data to move forward on this, to get to that point where we can determine the feasibility of it. And I'm in favor of moving forward with that proposal to try to get us to that point. I'm satisfied with Joanne's presentation and her background information that she sent us on her work and experience.
Okay. Anybody else have any comments here? Okay. I was going to suggest a discussion period for us, but that's purely up to if you guys want to move forward or if you want a little time to discuss this proposal.
I guess that depends on everybody. Sounds like Doc's comfortable with moving forward to the letter.
Well, I think my standpoint is we got an idea what this is going to cost us to move forward. I don't know if there's anything more to discuss on where to go until we get the information. So I for one, would be in favor of considering that project cost to making a motion to that effect.
The motion would be to retain CTC as a consultant.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Okay. Gentlemen?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
You have to have a second for your discussion.
I'll second the motion with a question.
Okay.
It has, you feel better?
Okay, yes, I do.
So let's go with this. It has been moved and seconded that we retain CTC as a consultant in the Gig Sublette project. Further discussion?
Do we have the money?
So we've got, we don't have reserves for
consultants.
A broadband project.
No, I'm talking about this
right.
for the consultant.
Our consultant fee has been exhausted.
That's why I asked.
There would have to be some creative accounting on our clerk's part.
She's pretty quiet.
You're rolling your eyes over there.
Yeah. So, Mary, would that be like I have to wait for a budget transfer in March?
We'll transfer funds in March.
Right.
Yeah. But if you guys decide that you want to sign a contract, I'll find the money.
At least there is money to buy.
And there is. We've done a pretty decent job at rat holing a little money here. So.
And is there other folks that want to participate?
That was going to be my question, Mr. Chairman. Is there any interest in anybody else participating in this part of it? Like the towns, maybe. I don't know if there is or not.
I think in the terms, resolutions and motions or support letters, they mentioned, all three of them mentioned that they support this with as much money as they can. I don't know about the consultant part. In the end, they are willing to partner.
Yeah, I think perhaps my look on this, Commissioner Bousman, is that if we decide to move forward with the project, then they can jump in with their contribution. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking perhaps as far as the consulting goes, that perhaps the county could take care of that. Matt?
Mr. Chairman, I know from the town of Pine Hills perspective that we're very much on board with the internet broadband program, and we have been very grateful for the commissioner's support of hiring Joe Sharkey. And you know, we would obviously have to budget any money for the consulting fee for CTC, but we'd appreciate it if you would carry that and know full well that you've got so far a council that's full on board with broadband, and we'd like to move forward on that. So I can't obviously commit anything. Rather than delay it, we'd ask you to move forward with it.
Sam?
Echo Matt Marks. Tom Wilson had a wish list meeting last night to, you know, compile a list of things we'd like to put in this year's budget that are going to be discussing probably beginning in April. Broadband was brought up at that meeting, and there was support, and there's a realization of the council members that it will require significant investment. What those dollar amounts are today would be inappropriate to say now, but there is definitely a lot of support and a realization that significant investment would be required from the towns.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? There's a motion on the table.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. I think without doing this, we're never going to be able to get to the point of knowing whether it's feasible or not.
Exactly. My point exactly.
That said, I'm in support. Yeah.
All right. Further discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. You are officially retained.
Thank you. So, our delight. I look forward to working with all of you.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Commissioner Noble is our liaison, our lead on this. So,
thank you guys for supporting us.
Yeah. Continue to be in contact with him and Albert. And let's see where we go.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, you guys.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We're going to take a 5-minute break. The sheriff had to step out, looks like.
Hey, Joe, we need to push this delegation on this FCC. So if you get a chance sometime, if you're going to visit with them, let me know.